It's all good. Gotta stay hydrated.
Okay, so we're back to another discourse, and this time we're going to be exploring one of my favorite topics, and it's egregores. Do you want to explain why we're going to be exploring egregores today?
Why? Because we said we would in the last discussion that we had, and also I'm working on a dissertation in them, the study of egregores and the use of them over the years in magical orders. So, and I find them fascinating because it's also kind of a psychological phenomenon as well. It's just like, you know, not only just the occult, but it depends on what view you're looking, what frame, what lens you're using, right?
Yeah.
How you can interpret them. But for this discussion, I'm excited to learn more about your practice with them, your experience with them from the occult perspective.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess egregores, they are a pretty recent phenomenon in occultism as far as the timeline of magical practice goes. They only really start being written about, I think, in the 18th century. And there, of course, the word itself is a Greek word, and it you know, that word is actually in some of the Apocrypha. It's egregori, if I'm correct.
That's right.
Yeah, egregori, which is famously associated with the Watchers of the Book of Enoch. But as, like, really exploring them and being a part of the occult lexicon and how we understand egregores in occultism, that it starts emerging in the 18th century. And then really the people who started working with them and developing them were the 19th century occultists.
Right.
Yeah.
Like Dion Fortune wrote about them a lot in Mystical Kabbalah and some of her other books too that I have read. And I know that the Golden Dawn systematized a way to create them, right? Like they made rules on how to create them for their members of their order so that they didn't get out of control.
Yeah. So I think, before we really explore egregores in depth, I guess, like, let's talk about what that word means right now in modern occultism, which is, it's kind of a buzzword, right? It's something that's a little trendy, but there's a lack of information on egregores, what they are and how to use them. It's another one of those words that gets thrown around the occult, and it's extremely confused. And the problem with egregores is there isn't a lot of literature out there on them. There's theories about them, how they work, how to outline them. There are the stories that we have from the orders. There are a few orders that are active today that still use them. But if you were trying to get a, you know, practical grimoire on how to make one and work with one, you'd be at a loss. You wouldn't be able to find them.
You would. Yeah, definitely. It's one of those things that feels to me like it's still pretty well kept under wraps in that regard. Like how to, you can't just go really buy a book on step by step how to do it. Which is a good thing and a bad thing, because as you said, it is used a lot, especially like on, you know, social media. A lot I hear people saying, referencing them all the time, but then talking about something that's not that at all. So it's kind of like the narcissist thing, you know, like everyone's calling everybody that, but they don't really know what it means. But yeah, there's not a lot of literature at all. And in my research for my dissertation, I've struggled to come up with enough sources to meet the requirements, you know, but I mean, I did, but barely. There's a lot that are out there that are more kind of new agey, like too, not more of the traditional. So those weren't, I wasn't considering those, you know. So if you eliminate those references, then yeah, it's hard to come up with good quality references on this topic whatsoever. But what does it mean?
So I think the occult understanding of egregores, they're kind of group thought forms almost, because when we're talking about them from an occulted format or a magical format, which is where the concept of egregores comes from. It's from the occult. Occultists and magicians believe in these things either as living entities, or which means that they have their own will and their own consciousness and their actual things, like spirits or demons or gods. However, they are created by the collective belief of a singular person. However, it has become common in pop psychology and pop sociology to take that term from the occultists and use it to describe a process of groupthink or a zeitgeist or a culture. Yeah. And I don't think that's necessarily wrong, because the occulted format, we are using that in a very, very similar way. The only thing that differentiates how we interface with them is that we have this extra belief that, you know, no, these are actual things. There is also, however, what is popular amongst the magical orders. I would say the Amorch is probably the one that's alive today that has the most famous egregores, that these things are astral places that you can visit. They are astral cathedrals. They are safe spaces. And because they are the process of a collective belief, they are the greatest protected secrets at the most inner part of these magical orders, because they do not want just anybody accessing them. They're afraid that it would profane the egregore. So there's a few different perspectives, and I think one of my favorite things about egregores, though, is it definitely is a new frontier in occultism, because there is not a lot of literature out there. There is not a lot of practical field manuals, and there is not a lot of legend or mythos surrounding them. We are talking about them, but nobody really knows how to utilize them the same way as, let's say, magical evocation or invocation, where we have very clearly defined systems that, you know, if you want to see a spirit in a crystal, there's a technology behind that has been developed by magus over the course of millennia, right? So,
I mean, I think when you're talking about from a psychological perspective, I think there is a big difference, because with the occult type, you're bringing that on purpose, like it's unintentional. But when we're talking about group dynamic or tribal dynamics or social, you know, like groupings, like having like peer pressure, you know, trends, things like that, those are all what they would consider to be egregoric too. But those aren't on purpose. Like, those people aren't aware that they're engaging with that at all. Like, they're just following the leader, you know? Whereas with the kind that are created that are intentionally created from a shared intention or belief, the people are aware that that's what is being created. So I think it's a difference of being the puppet master or the puppet, mm-hmm. personally. Like, that's how it comes across to me, because the people that are influenced in society by these things without being aware of it are literally being played by it. You know, they're not aware, they're not cognizant of it. And, you know, they're just following to follow. So I think in that aspect, that is a created entity based on people's willingness to follow. Yeah. Rather than a intentional purpose behind it to gain something in the material, mm-hmm. you know?
Yes. So my viewpoint on egregores, the reason I like this and I view it as a recent magical technology and an exciting magical technology, is because one of the things that I've picked up from my work with Chaos Magicians, and now anybody that knows me personally knows I can be a little bit critical of Chaos Magic, but I definitely do. I will say the work that Chaos Magicians do with egregores is some of the most inspiring magical work that I've seen. And while, you know, there are certain parts of the practice that I don't necessarily agree with, I wholly look to the Chaos Magicians as, you know, the pioneers and the techniques about like how to utilize egregores. And I think one of the things about my path is I have come into a unique position that probably the entire course of my magical practice or my magical path has been within creating and using egregores, which I think is a very unique position for a magist to be in. A lot of people don't get experience in that. And so I definitely do believe that I have some unique insights on it. And I do feel that I would be uniquely qualified. I might be able to put together a practical manual on how to create and manipulate them. However, I would make the argument, as you're saying, that you know, people are just following. There's a puppet master and a puppet. I would make the argument that there is no work with egregore that you are in no work with egregores that you are in control of, even if it is one that you've created, because from an occult perspective and a magical perspective, when these things hit homeostasis and they become their own things, you don't want to be attached to them, even if you made it, right?
Right. So, like, once they're autonomous,
yeah,
right, or sentient to whatever extent past what they were at the beginning, yeah, like, because, well, let's talk about that. Like, so if you're creating one without saying how to create them, you know, you create one for a shared intention with a group of people.
Yes. Right?
So, and then those people then feed it via attention, emotional, psychological attention, whatever. And good or bad, it doesn't matter. Either way, it's getting fed, right? So how do you let's say it's this tangible, to an extent, thing that you can bring in to help you do work, right? Mm-hmm. Like within ritual magic or ceremonial magic. So how do you anchor it to your group? Like, is there a process by which that you're aware to anchor it into the material?
So there's a few different techniques that I've gone through. One of my favorite techniques is giving it a geographic node.
Okay.
That has always been extremely successful. Even if you're working with people over vast distances, if you give the egregore a geographic home or a node, it's very similar to, you know, how people talk about local spirits or mm-hmm. how you can expand a local spirit's influence. So if you were creating egregore, that is one technique that you could go through. Basically, any ritual work that you would do to power the egregore would be done in the same geographic location. And the geographic location that you're going to choose is going to be one that's linked to kind of the qualities that the egregore participates in, right?
Okay.
But I think one of my favorite techniques and most successful techniques that I took inspiration from 4chan on this. So every single 4chan board has a their own cute little anime girl that they is basically this icon of the board's culture, right? So the paranormal board's anime girl, she's called it X-Tan. And so she's an anime girl that's wearing, you know, rainbow colored thigh highs, and she looks like a ghost, and she's got crazy eyes. She looks very like spooky and scary. Yeah. And I understood that the concept behind this was, you know, you're creating this kind of image or this mascot that's like pumped through. And so getting people to rally behind this kind of mascot and be like, look, like this is an icon of what this egregore represents. And so starting with the attributes, the qualities of the egregore, and then I ended up approaching an artist and I told her, I need you to draw me like draw me this, and this is going to be, you know, the representation of this egregore that I was working with this group project. And once I did that, there were other groups that noticed that I did that and they copied the technique. Yeah.
So I'm going to venture a guess here that this has something to do with the fact that you're like, you're good at marketing, because that is what you're like, that you're doing what the corporations do.
Yes.
When they create logos, mm-hmm. right? And then people buy into that logo, mm-hmm. and like Apple, or Nike or whatever. Yeah. Like those things, people go crazy for that. Their culture is their whole culture around it. So yeah. That's what you're talking about.
So that, there's a lot of, this is why I believe egregores, especially if you were conducting egregoric magic, there's no way to use egregores that is not insidious and manipulative. Like there's no white magic with egregores at all. You are looking at manipulating and utilizing a group hive mind. And that is also one of the reasons why you do not want to be attached to them, especially when they gain autonomy. Because if you go against what you have set up, if you fall out of line with that, it will chew you up and spit you out. However, I 100% agree with the sociologists and the psychologists that like to use it, because when I think about them, I think of them as like an occultist marketing or occultist company culture, you know. Right. That's almost what you're establishing. There's just an extra step of, but this is an entity or this is a thing that exists. The Amorc in the magical orders, they'll place these things in the astral realm. I personally myself place them in the noosphere, which is basically the sphere of ideas that surround the planet Earth, right? Where all our thoughts go in this aether, this intellectual sphere. And so I do not believe that these things have this same type of spirit as maybe your angel or your demon would, but they on 100% can interface. And if you're looking at the occult, they can interface with these things. And if you're looking at the occult cosmogonies, right? So one of my favorite verses that I quote all the time from all the occult literature is Sefer Yetzirah 3:4. And it's, God basically creates fire and which creates heaven, and then he creates water and earth, and then the air decides between them, right?
Okay.
So earth is made from water, heaven is made from fire, and it is air, which is, in occulted terms, we represent that with intellect, that decides between them. And from there, you kind of see the process of, Hermes and the wings of Isis, and there's a lot of, occulted things that happen there. So it's following this system of logic that you can find the utility of egregores. And I think even though my most successful egregoric projects, as in getting large groups of people behind something and caught up in something, you can rate them that way. However, when I was leading a group through initiatory rites, the first thing that we did was we set up an egregore specifically as a nodal access point to act as the interface between the gods and us. Okay. So every time that we were, whatever the gods were that we were utilizing, when we were trying to receive something from them, we would ask them through the egregore.
Okay. Yeah. Now let me ask you a question about this. When you say that you gave, you put them and a node, a space, right? What is that? So when you're instructing your members to feed them their energy, is that where they were meditating and traveling to that place in their mind's eye? Is that what they're doing? How does that work?
Yeah. So when they're first established, when they're very first established, when it's a personal thing, at home thing, it's like, okay, as the egregore is getting established, you need to find somewhere that you can get to really quickly, and then I will give them a list of things in the environment, right? So it'll be open sky, no tree coverage, there needs to be still water nearby, that kind of thing. So they will find a geographic location that is cool, like in their neighborhood or within the block that they can go to, and they can perform all the rites. And the thing is, all these geographic locations, they share in the exact same qualities, right?
Okay.
So if you're working with a lunar egregore, you want the still water. Okay. You want the open sky. You don't want any tree coverage. And so through that, you've set in the environments of every practitioner as they're performing their magical rites. through that environment, you're establishing this like quality, the same geographic location, okay. right? Because if you're talking about that which decides between the heaven and earth, you need something that is reflecting on the earth, what you are trying to access in heaven. And the egregore is going to be your go-between, almost like a daemon.
Okay, I see. So, but like they start off, right, like as servants in the beginning, mm-hmm. but they can become... You said you don't want to be attached to it, right? You've said that yes. twice now, I think.
Yeah.
So is that because of the tendency for them to become parasitic on their creators?
Yes. It can go in one or two ways. They can be a drain on you, right? So let's say if you are attached to an egregore that is attached to a lot of very sick people, you're going to become sick like them. Right. I think you'll see this in toxic families, right? Yeah. So everything has an egregore. Every group of people has an egregore. Yeah. Anything with a culture has an egregore yeah. attached to it. So yep. if you come from a toxic family and you are around that toxic family, you know, they're sucking the life out of you. If you are working at a toxic workplace, you know, yep. the second you walk in there, you can just feel the energy zapped out of you, right? And that's yep. the egregore that you're attached to. So even if the toxic workplace is your business, you know, it's still sucking the energy out of you. However, the worst manifestations of egregores that I have ever personally seen, the person who created the egregore would get turned on by the hive mind, and incredibly bad things would happen. Like, you know, it's not just getting thrown out, like I'm talking... you know, FBI reports. I've seen people's groups and these egregores that they set up, and a lot of times it'll be done naively. They won't understand, especially amongst chaos magicians, chaos egregores. Why would you, if you're going to set up a chaos egregore, why would you still be attached to it? Right? That thing is going to absolutely
like
ruin
chaos.
Your life.
Yeah.
yeah. So I think that the reason you don't want to be attached to egregores is because when they are autonomous and when they have their own will, if your will does not align with it, they're going to do what any other organism does, and they're going to either
push you out.
They're yeah. going to push you out, or they're going to turn on you and attack you.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's kind of like the hive mind is succeed at this at all costs, and anybody that goes against us is going to be food for
Well, so you see how egregores work reflected in
politics.
So sociology and politics. I always love to think of corporate structures for mm-hmm. how egregores operate. So you could have somebody that builds a company from the ground up, and they start with $0 and they take it to, you know, 100 million, and then they go public, and then there's a board of directors, and this person can ride with this company that they built from the ground up for 20 years. And then the second they get in a cheating scandal, the company decides, you know, you're bad for business, you need to get out of here, you know. And it's like, this is, what are you talking about? This is my I built this from the ground up, you know, but it's not yours anymore.
Yeah,
it's not yours, you know. There are too many people attached to it.
Yeah, yeah. This happens all the time, like all of the time. That and anybody that thinks that they don't interact with this concept of egregores. If you vote, you do. If you are affiliated with any political movement or party, you do. So there's that. And again, toxic families or any kind of family, actually, anything that has a group collective mindset mm-hmm. about a particular thing, right? So these are, they're created... Let's say, okay, so on the occult version of them, they're created on purpose mm-hmm. or brought in on purpose. But then at some point, like, they can turn on you, right? Like, mm-hmm. on the entire group, not just the one that may be kind of on the outs with some belief about it.
Yeah.
So why does that happen, and when does that happen?
Well, so you have to also be selective about who you're giving access to, right? So okay. I've worked in... groups where everybody had open access to it, and those are the egregores that would destroy like everybody's lives. Like it was exhausting to be involved in that, because basically any person with any type of spiritual or mental illness could throw whatever they wanted into it, which is why you see orders like the AMORC. They're very extremely selective about who right. they let access their egregore, because they need to make sure that whoever's accessing it isn't going to be throwing something into it that is going to act as a toxin to everybody that's attached to it or is using it as a safe place. Right.
Because toxic stuff's always much more powerful, like food, energy, right, source than non-toxic things, because there's so much more passion behind it for some reason. Mm-hmm. But yeah, mental health is important, and this is why I've always said, like, you shouldn't be practicing magic at all if you're not mentally stable, because it's going to yield very potentially disastrous results, right? And if you're part of that group, then, and you're putting in your own drama into the situation, then yeah, it's going to cause chaos, because it's going to be like craving more of that, right? So then other people get sucked into it and start doing the same things, and like, and then all, but like also, I mean, yeah, we can say that that's true, because look at religion, right? If we're saying religion all has egregores also.
Yes.
So the saints, Jesus.
So anything. I think that that is a very very tricky thing to tread, because once you start getting into the egregores of religions, you have to start to discern, you know, where is the God and where is the egregore?
Well, I'm talking, let's use, like, for example, evangelicals. They're their own brand, right?
Yes.
And that's a brand, yeah. of Christianity. And they're very extreme in a lot of ways. And all those people, they agree with it. If they don't agree with it, what happens? They get kicked out, right? Or exiled, if you will. So they exist everywhere. They're not just an occult thing. I mean, the occults perhaps labeled it for what it is. But it's everywhere. And so everybody, willing or not, is part of it. I just want to know, like, how do these things... What are the signs that they're evolving, like they're spiraling out of control?
Well, so you have to understand, it, using my working model on them, and I think, I mean, they're, I know I'm not the only person that believes that they're noetic entities. I just know that nobody can really for sure say what they are. It's not as set in stone as other magical ideas and theories. But if you're working off the model that they are noetic entities, you have to look at them as intellectual principles. So I think that when you're segregating, so like, let's take the Catholic Church, for example, right? What in the Catholic Church is, you know, fire is passion. What is coming down from God in that, and what is coming down from intellect? The arguments of the theologians, right? You're talking about the long tradition of polemics and apologetics that are happening within the Catholic Church. What is happening there? Well, those are egregores fighting, right? That those are the definitions of egregores, and if you pay attention to the process of apologetics and polemics, you will see how Christianity is fractured and uses egregores. So theology is an intellectual pursuit that is coming from a place of intellect. You're trying to rationalize and understand religious experience, right? So it's not coming from a place of spirit. It's not coming from a place of will, of God's will. So there you can identify an egregore, right? So if you're able to identify the egregore there, then like, what do you have left in the church? What do you have left in the Catholic Church that is like, this is actually, this is God, this is the egregore. This is God, this is the egregore.
You know, my opinion on this is a hot take, obviously.
Yeah.
And I don't care. I do not care, because I am not religious at all, and I hate it. Because it is not, none of it is. Like, I feel like none of it is. It's all man-made, and it's to take away power from people. So it's always been that. And it's under the guise of holiness. It's under the guise of God. And maybe at one point, way back when, it started that way. But what we have now is just people in control. And so I think all of that is, because anybody that tells you that you have to go through them to get to God is full of shit. And that's sad for me. But I feel bad for people that believe that. If you do, sorry. That sucks for you. But I don't see how people don't see it. It's very clear. Even before I knew about this concept, it was like very clear to me that there's so much, not just religion, but just a politics, the way people behave in the name of, you know, is like, or just wars in the name of whatever, all of those things that have these driving forces behind them that are like held up by these like morals or ethics, or we've got to be this person, this country to show this, or we've got to help these people over here. All that has underlying ego driven human bullshit behind it. Like none of it's godly, you know?
So I think right now what you are defining is an egregore. And I would say that because all the things that you have listed, the modes of expression, and you started with ethics and morals. Like ethics and morals are an intellectual pursuit, right? Mm-hmm. If you're talking about pure religious experience, you've completely left out of your description in the church. Right. What about the mystics that operate within the Catholic Church that have direct religious experience? What about the exoteric? The exoteric religious practitioners? Not the priests or the popes that are waging wars, but I'm talking about the people that go to church every single Sunday and they have a deep and connected relationship with God.
Those people are fine.
So you can see within the church that God, there is an expression of God throughout the church.
From the people that are practicing it, but not the actual organization itself, is what I mean.
So the parts of the organization that you're talking about, these are the dogmatic, intellectual, theological, that kind of stuff. That is when the intellect is exalted over God's will, right?
Right.
And so that is the will of the egregore. So you've identified the egregore of the Catholic Church. And that is the thing that a lot of people have an issue with. That is, the egregores are the things that everybody has issues with about everything, whether it's your political party, whether it's the dirty white trash family across the street, right? It's the egregores. It is the intellectual, it is the human will behind this group of people that you have an issue with. It is not the expression of these people.
It's the idea behind it. Like that's what I mean. Like I've had a very, very spiritual, like I guess you could, not religious. If I was, you could say it was religious, but I had an experience that lets me know for sure that God exists, right?
Yeah.
For positive sure. But from that experience, I now have a much harsher take on things like organized religion because of that experience. Before, I just thought it was stupid. Mm-hmm. Now I'm like, oh, no, it's like detrimental to a lot of people. The people that are within it that act, they're the outliers, though, because again, it's the follower effect. Like, it's just many people follow.
Authentic spiritual practice is always an outlier, whether it's an exoteric or an esoteric thing. Why? Right? It is not something that everybody's called to in their current iteration, right? We're all supposed to return home on a long enough timeline. However, to hold everybody to that expectation in this lifetime.
Right. Yeah. No, you can't. I'm very aware.
Some people
aware
are
of
not
that.
Going to get it.
No.
But then there are people who are called, and sometimes they're called through an exoteric faith, and sometimes they're called down an alternative path. And, you know, those are the seekers. Those are where we're at.
Right. Yeah. I mean, maybe it's because, maybe the reason that I just had this thought that came into my head right now. It's, okay, so because we're all on this path of like figuring it back out again.
Yeah.
Right. One of those natural course corrections would be to be religious so that you could come to the realization that this is crap and like I am part of it anyway.
Maybe, yeah.
You know, like in another lifetime. But like you said, most people aren't there. At least the people that you're going to encounter are very seldom. Do you find somebody that's already figured a lot of it out? Mm-hmm. And in no disrespect to people that are religious. Like I'm talking about the institutions that take advantage of those people, because whether we like to admit it, I mean, it's in the news all the time, for God's sakes. Yeah. Like it's everywhere.
It was just in the news yesterday, right?
Yes.
Were you the one that
the
showed me that?
The Archdiocese here in Los Angeles. Yeah.
Yeah.
Got busted with
I hate
inappropriate
that.
Material.
I hate that so much. You know, I try so hard to be apologetic for that church, and I always look like an idiot.
You keep doing it.
I try so hard to be like, you know what, like, give them a break, you know, like, it's a, you know, it's a really big organization, and they do not make it easy.
That's here now. Yeah. Like, that's hopefully hits how close
it,
to home.
It hits very close to home.
You know, yeah. We are here, and, like, that's not okay. Like, and again, that's, you know, those are people that maybe, like you said, that get caught up in it, and they have that, they can get away with whatever they want because everybody loves them.
Absolute power corrupts absolutely, right?
Right. Yeah. Yes, that is true. I'd like to think, I mean, I know I wouldn't corrupt that way, but like to think that if that were given to me, absolute power, I would not, but I am human after all.
Well, we were just talking about what we would do to people that cut us off in traffic today, right? If
theoretically,
society wouldn't.
Hypothetically, yeah, yes. Definitely. Oh, God. Yeah. Drive in LA and tell me you don't want to murder somebody. or Glendale specifically, like, it's bad, you know? Yeah. But this is, I mean, okay, so, all right, so, like, let's, you know, with the way that I understand it is how you detach from one.
Mm-hmm.
An egregore would be to stop giving it attention, right? When it becomes problematic, to starve it, mm-hmm. right? But can one person just do that, or does it have to be everybody in the group, or can one person detach from it before, like, you know, without mm-hmm. everybody else and walk away from it unscathed?
Well, so there's a few different, I think there's two methods to detach from an egregore. The first one, and this is going to be like a purely like mundane psychological process of just define the egregore. If you can define the egregore, you can outline it, right? So,
oh, it's like a demon knowing its name?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And Valentin Tomberg, interestingly enough, I think it is the devil card, his elaboration on the basically gnosis of the devil card is that the devil card is egregores, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the vices. And
the things that chain you.
The tie that binds.
He goes straight to say that egregores are straight up demons, and that the demons, demons are egregores, the gods of old are demons, and therefore the gods of old are egregores. And he was a Christian hermeticist, and definitely, you know, believed in, you know, the kind of Christian perspective that anything that's not within that theology is a demon. However, I always think about Valentin Tomberg's interpretation of egregores, even though it's highly deviant to how everybody else understands them.
Okay, sure.
So I guess the first one is defining the egregore, outlining the egregore. So if you could think of it like this, if you realize if every time you hear a bottle pop, you think of a Coca-Cola commercial, right?
Pavlovian response.
Pavlovian response or something. If you're able to identify that, basically, oh, that sound is in a Coca-Cola commercial, and that's why every time I think of that sound, it's like I'm under the influence of this corporate egregore, Coca-Cola, or whatever, right? And so just through that awareness, through that definition, I think one of the more insidious tactics, and one of the ways that I have very successfully detached myself and a lot of large group of people from egregores before is by creating opposition, right? And so this technique, I like to think about the interplay between the National Socialists and the Communists, right?
Okay.
So those two ideologies needed each other. They couldn't exist without each other. The Communists would, I mean, Communism started and National Socialism was largely a response to that, right? If Communism hadn't started creating huge uproar in Eastern Europe and dispersed all the intellectuals from St. Petersburg, National Socialism would have never taken hold. The National Socialists needed the Communists to point out and say, look at what they're doing. Look how messed up this is. You need to come into the safety of my form of extremist ideology, right?
Mm-hmm.
And because people were so scared of of this other. And once again, we're seeing how egregores are defined, right? Exactly the way that Christianity splintered through apologetics and polemics that it was utilizing at first against other religions and then it turned in on itself and started utilizing it against itself. You see this exact same thing happening with National Socialism and Communism. People wouldn't have bought into National Socialism if it wasn't for this, you know, you're not them. Look, that's scary, that's scary, that's scary. You don't want that. So we're the opposite. We're going to protect you from that. And that's how they attracted so many people. And then the communists had the National Socialists to look at and say, and that defined the communist movement even more, having, you know, nationalists to point at and say, like, look at, like, how terrible and horrifying this is.
Oh, so you find a worse...
Yeah. So this process right here is how you detach other people from egregores and how you detach yourself from an egregore. If you are attached to an egregore, and this is works really well with magical orders, if you are attached to an egregore and you're trying to get away from it, you have to instantly find... you have to paint it as an enemy, and then you have to what's going to feed a power, right? So let's say if it's just you, it's not an egregore. If it's just you identifying, trying to create this thing, it's not an egregore. So you have to first find a bunch of negative things about it, things that frighten other people, and then you have to ramp those fears up in other people.
Fear-mongering.
And that creates this break, this psychological break, to where it's like, if you have an alternative, if you have an alternative definition and an antithesis to this egregore.
Okay.
I hit that mic. No. An antithesis to this egregore, then you can point to that egregore and you can say, this is scary. You don't want this. Come here. Come with me. I'm going to, like, okay. This is going to protect you.
Okay, but then what? Like, say you don't want to be part of it at all anymore. Like, is it possible? It's not possible?
I think it is. Yeah. It's literally defining it, being aware of it, being aware of how you're attached to it. So one of the things that I think egregores as a buzzword or as a buzz term, everybody thinks of them. It's kind of the evolution of the tulpa
yeah.
fad that was happening in the mid 2010s online.
I don't know what you're horrible. Talking about. Like, what?
You weren't a...
No.
Oh, it was terrible. It was an online thing.
Uh-huh.
And it was basically, you know, grown adults with paraphilias trying to make their paraphilia original characters a real thing.
Oh, my God. Okay, so first of all, just in case anyone doesn't know, what's a paraphilia? It is a belief that is contrary to the popular status quo, right? Or a practice, like something that's deviant, considered deviant in the culture, right? And so you're saying that these people had like fan romantic relationships with animated characters?
Yes. And so...
And these are grown adults?
Well, so it's really a shame it's really a shame what happened here, because tulpas come from... I'm pretty sure they come from Tibetan practice.
Yes. They do.
And that is like, basically the monk through a process of meditation, he's breaking off a part of his psyche and he's creating like another astral entity, right? And it's this very intense process. And of course these internet people get a hold of it and they turn it into, I can make my fetish imaginary friend real, you know?
Wow. Yeah. Well, and that's like, you just point out something, and I meant to bring this up earlier and I forgot. So like, you know, I have a degree, I just got my master's finally conferred in consciousness studies. And one of the things I was, you know, I've been studying consciousness and for the past 2.5 years now, like solely for that degree. And one of the things that I was studying was what school I wanted to go get a PhD in, and possibly consciousness studying, and I came across UC Irvine.
Mm-hmm.
And at UC Irvine, there's a doctor there, Dr. Donald Hoffman, and he's like world-renowned consciousness expert. And they have a quantum computer there, And he gave this lecture. It's on YouTube. You can find it, I'm sure. It's and he was talking about how they programmed the computer to simulate human interaction when two like minds meet. What happens? Mm-hmm. And they let it run on its own. And you know what happened? It creates a third autonomous entity when two people, a minimum of two people, come together. Oh shit. I just hit my mic. When two people come together and have a meeting of the minds and they have a shared idea or belief, it, the computer, then created a third entity that's a conglomeration of those two people that can go off and do its own fucking thing. That's what the computer showed happens. And I was like, so cool. Like, shit. I mean, and that wasn't programmed in. That was just like, here are the parameters of, like, you know, human interaction. Show us what happens in this, the natural evolution of that, and that's what it shows.
Yeah.
So is that the same thing?
I mean, it's pretty amazing. So I feel like that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, I know, it's amazing. And I this guy's, have you seen his stuff?
I have not.
Oh,
no.
My gosh. Yeah. Well, he's convinced that we live in a simulation and that there's binary code running in the background everywhere. And I want to go study. Like, that's where I really want to try to get in there. But he's very forward thinking when it comes to consciousness studies. And he said he was amazed that they were not expecting that.
Yeah.
So they ran it multiple times, like, and that's what keeps happening. And then other labs did the same, and that's what keeps happening. And it's not just a fluke.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess that kind of backs up that noetic idea about where egregores exist and how they exist, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not, it was not in the actual realm, like here where we are, but it was out, like, in a different dimension.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it was showing.
And the nose.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I'm not sure what, I don't think they were able to identify it, but it's just, it would hover around those two individuals for a period and then it would take off. Like it was like being raised and then left the nest.
Huh?
So yeah, I'll show you that later.
That's super cool.
Yeah. I can't believe I haven't shared that with you before. That was the first time I ever saw one of his lectures. It was an assignment for a class.
Yeah.
To watch it. And I was like, my mind was blown by that concept. But it makes sense to me. Uh-huh. I think, we're able to give things power by belief. So viral ones, right? Like the viral tulpa. But there's also been viral egregores that have been very famous,
I think,
in the news.
Yeah. So I think that right now what we're seeing with egregores is just we're seeing kind of it on the tail end. The internet's been obsessed with thought forms,
right?
So we're seeing it on the tail end of just this, like, horrible culture that showed up with tulpas, and now we're seeing it again happening with egregores, where it's like people are taking this I can't stress enough, just there's no level of working with egregores that is not just absolutely sociopathic, you know. But people are getting this idea, and like, oh, there's these things called egregores, so I can make my fandom real or whatever it is. Like, it's getting it's going the way of the tulpa at the moment. But I honestly think that's because there's so much confusion about what they are and how to utilize them. The orders are the masters of egregores. They're the ones that actually practically utilize them and have been pushing the technology on them. I think the chaos magicians and the online cults are probably at the forefront of that. Whereas when we were talking about the Golden Dawn, I know one of my favorite stories about Julius Evola and his problematic politics aside, he was probably one of my favorite occult philosophers. But one of my favorite stories about Julius Evola is that he was so wrapped up in resurrecting the egregore of the fallen Roman Empire, because he was Italian, right? He wanted, you know,
dream.
I know, he wanted Rome to come back, you know, and so he believed that his work in resurrecting the egregore of the dead Roman Empire, the ancient Roman Empire, was why Mussolini came to power. So he looked at Mussolini as the manifestation of this egregore that he'd been working on. And I know during World War II, the Golden Dawn occultists, they had an astral egregore that they were using, that they were accessing to try to... Was it the Golden Dawn? No, it wasn't the Golden Dawn.
During the war?
I think it was...
I don't know. Golden Dawn definitely was doing stuff.
Yeah.
Then too.
Yeah. But yeah, there were, I can't remember who it was. I'm actually, my
that
dating's
World
wrong.
World War One, though, like not World,
World
War
II. Was it World War One? Okay. Yeah. They were creating an egregore to protect yeah. Britain. Right. Yeah. So.
Yeah. That's in World War One.
Yeah.
But like, I think, I don't know. I don't know, man. It's funny to me because I feel like this, all of this has just been, I mean, on the new, like, okay, so recently on the, so what would you say, kids, okay, let's talk about like kids, mm-hmm. the impressionable, parents aren't watching what they're doing online, etc. And then we have things, these like mythos that come out of online chat rooms. I don't know where the hell mm-hmm. this shit starts, but like, because I was not very online present, like in forums or something ever. Mm-hmm. I've never been. But there was a phase going around recently, I don't know, it was not real recent, but there was a murder that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Where teenage girls killed another teenage girl because of some entity that they believe told them to do it that they learned about online,
mm-hmm.
which was Slender Man, right? And it was a huge trial. And this girl went to prison. You know, she's still in prison, I think. Maybe she got out. She might have got out. I don't know. But they stabbed their friend, like, you know, a lot. Like, they took her out and they killed her because they sacrificed her to Slender Man because mm-hmm. that's what they said it told them to do.
Yeah.
Is that, like, what is that? Is that a, and is that a, that gone very wrong? Is
I
that...
think I remember, I think I've been exposed to that before. I don't know. I just think those were teenagers
being mentally
weird.
Unstable. Yeah.
There was nothing like, to me that called out, they're under the influence of a powerful egregore.
No,
like,
no, it was, that's what their excuse was.
Yes. Yeah. So I think that, I mean, something that I keep talking about is, you know, as occultists, as wizards, we believe these things are real. You know, these are not just mere psychological processes. It's not just mere groupthink. Right. And so, you can recognize in egregore's influence by, you know, is stuff magically manifesting? Is there a supernatural component to it? Right.
What, define that for me. Like, what does that look like? Cause you know me.
So if you're, I know with the Amorc, their egregore, there is astral projection that is wrapped up into it. Right. You're going to see synchronicities happening when you're talking about order specific egregores, if they're setting up like an entity itself. There's synchronicities that are experienced with it in all the users' practices. So they'll see the same symbols, they'll have the same experiences, they'll get the same messages, right? It'll happen amongst multiple people, right? Okay. And when you're using them as nodal access points, or if you're using them as a geographic node, that place is going to feel like, if you're into like the folksy kind of witchy local spirits or whatever, wherever you've set that egregore, its nodal access point is going, there's going to be a local familiar or spirit there that the, you know, that is your egregore. That
okay.
is the one that you've built there, attached there. So one of the things that you will notice amongst people that are attached to egregores when they're doing any magical work, whether it's meditation, prayer, study, that kind of stuff, you will see the same things get spat back at you, right? So one of the reason that I talk about, I don't necessarily think egregores work if everybody is fully aware of the intention behind them.
Interesting point.
Yes.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah. So in your experience with them, when you created them,
yeah.
Was everybody told the same information? Like, I mean, what does everybody
it's
get the same?
It has to be heavily gatekept. heavily gatekept. Even a lot of the people that get that start working with egregores are not fully aware of how they work and how nasty and insidious they are. And so just by exposing people, like if you're working with somebody and they're like, hey, join my order, we've got an egregore, they're definitely not telling you that they're using you for that egregore, because, you know, you don't want to be attached to their egregore. That's not an exciting thing to be doing.
What if you know
that's
about
a bad
it?
Thing for you?
What if you know that that's what they're doing, but they don't know that you know? Does that matter?
I don't know. I mean, if you knew what was happening with the egregore, you wouldn't want to be attached to it in the first place. Like, with the egregores that I... After the very first egregore that I was working with, and it just ran train on basically everybody who was attached to it, because nobody knew what they were doing when it was established. After that, I kept very strict policy. It was like, yeah, like, I will start them. I will create them. I will... attach people to them. I'm not attached to them myself.
Okay. Yeah. So you're puppeting the puppet master.
the reason that I like using them is as nodal points, right? Okay. They can work like daemons. So if you're setting a geographic access point for them and you have a bunch of people working with them, but you yourself are not attached to it, right? So let's say that there is a sigil that is used to charge that egregore, and every single person in the group is using that sigil, and you're the only person not using that sigil because it is your egregore, and you do not want to get dragged into whatever those people are pumping into it, right?
Right.
You can, however, get from those people
what they got.
Hey, so what did you see?
Okay.
What did you...
And that's the difference that's different from... going against it after being attached to it already. That's different?
Yes.
If you just like hands off from the start.
Yes.
After the
thing, the last egregore I created, that was entirely how the process worked. I did not magically work at it. I just got information from people who were feeding it.
So what is like, what's, how are they used? Cause I know the Freemasons use them too.
Uh-huh.
I have not been privy to that information, probably because I don't go to meetings ever. But what are you using them for? Like, what is the basic? Because I've read about protection. Mm-hmm. I've read about, like, obtaining specific ritual outcomes. Mm-hmm. But is that it?
So it is a really good way to interface with, the celestial sphere, the heavens, the spirits, that kind of thing. If you're thinking about how people understand it, or I guess Valentin Tomberg's position on egregores, that they are demons or old gods or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. If you can come from the perspective of, if you are establishing an egregore under the power of some type of old god or some type of demon, right? You have built into this demon or this old god that you're working with, here's 10 to 15 people that are worshiping you, right?
Yeah.
Like, that are offering to you, sacrificing you. It's like this package that you can just hand over to.
Oh, as a like kind of, oh, as an offering. Okay. I see what you mean. Now, do you think, I'm just curious about this. Do you think that if you have an order of people and some of your members are able to just do that without that, would you still need one? Would you still create
I'm
one?
Sorry?
If you could do, if you have people that can do those things without creating something like that, is there still a reason to create them?
I don't think there's, I mean, within the ways that I've utilized them, there's not really much reason to create them. I think when I was working with them, it was more of like out of the spirit of pioneering, the great frontier.
Yeah.
It's like, how do these things work? And I've found a lot of very, very practical techniques to defining them, utilizing them, and using them for my own personal gain and magic. However, I guess there would be a practical use to creating one as, like, you know, the Aimworks egregore, where it's like an astral cathedral that you can go into that's a safe space that hands down, almost like an Akashic, I guess. You know, you can store information there. I mean, if it resides in the noosphere, the Aimwork believes it resides in the astral. If it resides in the noosphere, any way that you would want to interface with the heavens, with everything that was extralunar and not sublunar, the egregore would be your go between for it.
Okay. Interesting. So then the Aimwork has managed to control theirs.
It's not necessarily so the egregores that are popular today, they're like thought forms or entities. They're heavily anthropomorphized. They're associated the same way that gods or demons would be associated. The Aimwork's egregore is a cathedral. It's like a place, a building that you can go to.
Yeah. Interesting. That's interesting. Yeah. Earlier you said something about how it's definitely not white magic. What the fuck is white magic?
I actually don't believe in this dichotomy, but neither. I was just
curious.
I was just using that as a turn of a phrase that
people understand, right?
Yeah, people understand that you're up to no good if you're working on the egregores.
But I mean, I think that's an important distinction to make. Is like I hear this all the time. Like mm-hmm. I see videos about it. Like you should not be practicing anything but white magic. What the fuck are you talking about? Like, I don't even know what that means. Like, as someone that's been practicing magic for 34 fucking years consistently, like, there is no such thing. Like, it's magic. All of it's just magic. It's like, okay, you could be doing something that's nice for somebody, or you could not. It doesn't matter. It's still the same thing. Yeah. Like, it's still on the same spectrum, right? Like, it just drives me nuts. I just had
It's not there's no dualistic black and white magic or left hand and right hand path in my opinion. No. Like
you could be focused solely on doing shitty stuff.
That's a very dualistic take, right? And dualism is something that we transcend. We're supposed to transcend dualism when we initiate, right?
Right.
However, you know, sometimes when we're, you know, shooting back and forth,
I know.
We can land in those. But the only things I believe in is there's good magic and there's bad magic. Right. And that is not a moral position. That is like you're either good at magic or you suck at it. Magic.
I think a lot of people are bad at it, actually. So
it's more of like a ladder of progression and not like like moral right and wrong.
Right.
Like,
I mean, it's because there's no laws that oversee this, right? Yeah. Like, there's not. Like, we don't have any, like, there's nobody's going to come and arrest you for doing black of magic as opposed to white. It's just funny to me, and I know that you don't believe that. That's why I just want to bring it back up, because I've not usually heard those terms come out of your mouth. But, yeah, it's... So this is manipulative, though. Like, so it is a form of manipulation of people that are engaging in it, typically speaking, right? Like, so you're manipulating energy, people's energies to further your own gain in some way, shape, or form.
If you're bad at egregores, or if you don't have a lot of experience with them, you're going to hurt a lot of people. And if you're good at egregores, you are intentionally misleading people.
That's what I mean. Yeah. So that's interesting. So this would be on what most people would call then, on the darker side of magic, right? Yeah. That's why. Because it is inherently deceptive, right?
Yeah. I guess deceptive in the way is if you just don't tell somebody, are you lying? You know, it's like you're not being wholly honest, but you're also not necessarily.
You're lying by omission,
which is
up for a lot of debate, moral and ethical debate.
If you're using egregores and you're attaching people to egregores, And they're willingly I'll work with egregore or something. You are banking on them not.
Or just being sick in the head and being okay with it. Because I guarantee you there's a lot of people out there that are like, I don't care, I'll do it. Yeah. You know, and because they just want to see something. They want to be part of something that actually
I would
works.
Say the last egregoric project was the one where I didn't touch it and I didn't let anybody know.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, you guys are going to do this and that kind of thing. Okay. And then you're going to report back to me. You're going to let me know what's happening.
Yeah,
you know,
I love
and I just filtered all the information, you know, didn't let them share with each other. And I was able to develop an outline of, you know, what was happening here. And that was, a really important part of that project that we were working on. That's what made the project successful. However, at the same time, like that was probably there were no ill intentions there. I wasn't trying to while I was not being completely honest with the people that I was that was working on this project with me, I was also not like leading them anywhere bad.
Right.
I guess that would make sense.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it does.
I wasn't like trying to be a cult leader or something like that.
Yeah. No, I think it makes a difference. I think it does. Your intention matters.
Because somebody else could do the exact same thing and their intention could be like, I'm, you know, trying to,
I can think of one person in history
who have sex with every single person in this group, you know?
I can think of a lot of people actually, but one in particular that I will not mention, but you know, he's a definitely did that so many times in history that's happened, I believe. And and it's just like where everything just takes a mind of its own and just starts going down this like path.
Yeah, so I think you actually do see that in like if you're talking about cults, like
where
the cult leader starts to believe their own thing.
I can't tell sometimes because I know that to be a good cult leader, you have to believe, you know, at least pretend you believe your own bullshit. But like sometimes, I feel like these people become brainwashed.
If you tell
themselves,
yourself something, if you're saying something enough times, even if it starts off as like, I'm telling you a lie, after a while, you're going to believe it.
So I can tell you for sure. Like when I was, I used to teach forensic science, right? Uh-huh. And I have some friends that are FBI agents. They came to talk to my class about things. And one of my students, probably going to be a criminal if he isn't already, okay, I'm not going to lie, he asked, how do you pass a polygraph? And one of the other students was like, oh, you put a penny in your mouth. All these dumb things, like, you know, these like...
You put a penny in your mouth?
Yeah, like, I don't know.
Where's that? What's the reason
behind
that?
Oh, because it, like, the copper and the penny, something with your, like, the galvanic response of the machine.
Electrocutes, some shit.
I don't know.
Okay. You're acting as a conductor.
He was a scientific thing. And like, there's actually, you can look online and you'll see that as a way to beat a lie detector. It doesn't work, I don't think.
Yeah.
But the one way, and I was furious with my buddy who told the students this, because I was like, why would you tell these kids this? So I'm going to tell you now. was that you believe your own lie. And then you're not lying. So if you can convince, that's what like, you know, sociopaths do. They will believe, or narcissists, they'll believe the narrative they've created.
Yeah.
Because they tell it to themselves so much that it becomes their story.
Mm-hmm.
And like, they believe it. So when they're asked the question, they pass because they believe it. So I do think that some of these cult leaders they brainwash themselves, you know, because it's hard not to. Like, if you think about that cycle just for a second, like, you're telling people a whole bunch of stuff that you made up, okay? Let's just say you made up something and, like, you're telling everybody this. And those people believe you, you know? There's no, maybe very little pushback or something. And if there is, you're able to quell that. And then those people start talking about it around you like it's fact.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's belief, right? So you're now hearing your own bullshit regurgitated to you. And now your own power of suggestion and manipulation has now become a weapon against you. And so because you're around it all the time, it's a feedback loop, right? And so if you're around those people that you're controlling, you know, culting or whatever you want to call it, you're going to be hearing your own rhetoric coming back to you. And then it's going to be reinforced because it's your ego is getting stroked, like all these different things. And yeah, like you'll start to believe it. I mean, I don't know how some of them can believe some of the things that they were saying, like, you know, this alien spaceship's coming to pick us up, you know, on this date when the comet comes, whatever.
Time to board the spaceship.
You know,
let's go.
Yeah.
It's gonna be
and like,
fun.
I mean,
yeah.
And that's always baffled my mind how, and if you're trying to start a cult or you have one, like, don't do this. This is stupid. Like, how can you, I don't get this. When you give a date of something that's going to happen, like, what the fuck? Like, it's so dumb.
Every time I see that, I'm just like, I can see everyone that ends negatively is always with, like, they usually all end negatively, but the ones that end horrifically are always the ones that set a specific date and time and then gets to it and they've got no other option but to...
To, like, kill everybody.
Kill everybody, exactly.
Drink the Kool-Aid, cyanide pills, whatever. Like, it's crazy.
Okay, so note to self... Never set a date.
Right. I'm telling you right now. You're welcome. That's what it is. Yeah. You don't, because, I mean, honestly, and if you're thinking logically, and if you were actually a real occultist, you would know that, like, there's no time in the first place. It's a freaking goddamn made up human thing. So your concept of time guaranteed is not going to match whatever the fuck's going on elsewhere. Like, so right there, you're wrong. You already failed. Yeah. Like, so it's just like... Why would you think that was going to work out for you? Just curious. Like, it's just, that always makes me laugh. Like, I don't get it. We just had another case of that. There's another cult where this lady died. You know, I'm talking about that lady.
Mount Shasta lady?
Yeah. Like, well, she called her mother, right? Like, wasn't that?
I think so, yeah.
And she had, I don't even remember what her whole thing was, but, like, you know, it didn't happen. And like, you know, people, but even when
she seemed really dumb, though,
she was really dumb. Yeah. Like, but she was, you don't have to be smart to lead people, because most people are not smart.
Yeah.
Like, so, and it's, and people want to believe, they want to be part of something. So I think with this egregore thing, like, I think the reason people hop on the bandwagon with branding or political parties or religious movements or whatever is because of that that feeling of being included in something important. Right. And that stems from, I think, a lack of community and, like, you know, so authentic connection.
This is, I think, my biggest criticism of basically theology. And, you know, that's a big thing coming from me, seeing as I consume so much theology, right? Yeah.
Yes.
My biggest criticism of theology is that this does not look like an authentic expression of faith. It looks like an identity crisis, right? Okay. And so I think that's where people get involved in ideologies, which are secular religions, and they get wrapped up in things like apologetics or polemics, and theology as a core part of their identity and who they are. And that's what causes, like, that is feeding the egregore. That's what causes the conflict between these things. That's where you're providing this hardline definition of separation, right? And as you're separating yourself, as you're laying down those walls, you are committing the original sin. You are falling from grace every single time you do that.
Is that because you're is it a false idol? What is it? Is it that you're
separating yourself from God?
Right. And yes, this is why I have a problem with religion. This is exactly why, because again, it's like, it's outside of you and it's out separate from you, despite the fact that the Bible, like, literally says God, you know, in his own image, right? Like, that means a literal term. Like, I'm very aware of that now. But yeah, that is what it is. It's like, and then anything that falls outside of this, like, guidelines that they've set for that particular practice or group is bad, right? So then it shatters everything, the community.
Well, it shatters
everything.
The identity. Whereas if you have direct religious or mystical experience, you are completely secure in your relationship with your creator and with the world around you.
Right.
You have, there's no reason to pick a side, because you know through direct experience that it doesn't matter. We're all going home.
Like, here's the thing. Like, I'm going to say, like, when I died and was dead clinically for a while, when I came back, the number one, like, well, one of the number one takeaways I had was that, oh shit, we're all the fucking same thing. Like, none of us are different from each other, despite how different we are here. like at the root of it, we're all a fucking same. And so if I go around being an asshole to other people because I'm in a bad mood, whatever, I'm being an asshole to myself. And like, and it, I'm only hurting myself at the end of the day and everybody else. And like these differences everybody has, like race, orientation, whatever, all those things, rich, poor, educated, uneducated, all those are just filters to make, to lead us to believe that we're different, to keep us like in this fractured kind of state. And it's not true. Like, and yeah, you, there's no reason, if you know God on a personal level for real, and it's not just a belief that you have like, oh, I think it's real. You know damn well that that's wrong, like to behave in any way, shape or form that,
or that, that these are actual, that these are actual distinct separations, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because that direct experience, that direct knowledge, you recognize that, you know, any argument you make between, well, this is, you know, this is what makes an Adventist different from a Baptist. You know that
that's a man-made thing.
It has no,
no weight.
That is an intellectual wall.
Yep.
That is an intellectual separation that serves to divorce you from the absolute one that everything is, that all of being is, that all of existence is.
Yep. Just like science is too. And I love science, but it is also, because now we are talking about people that you believe in hocus pocus compared to facts, which, by the way, they're not facts. Anybody, oh my God, like that is the biggest lie. Like, oh, science is set in stone. No, it isn't. Like, it's not, dude. Like, I have had to correct my own words almost every single time I've taught science. By the end of the year, I had to go back and correct something because we have a new discovery that changes what I said earlier. So there's no such thing as like a hard line like that in anything we do. But like, yeah, it's definitely a separation, like a way to keep us separate. And I don't know where that comes from, but I think the separation in and of itself is another version of an egregore. It's, let's say it's a way to get what they want.
Yeah.
Whoever they are. I don't know who they are. Mm. Just saying, to get what they want by using the followers to achieve that goal, right?
Yeah. So just like laying down a definition detaches you from an egregore, laying down a definition is what creates egregores, right?
Yeah. So they're what, like it's the same thing. Yeah. What creates them can kill them, and what kills them creates them.
But this goes into the process of magic and the role of intellect in magic, understanding in magic, Bina in magic, right?
Okay.
And so it's that even from a place of understand of knowing that this is all one, what is the function of laying down these definitions, of using our words to lay down these definitions is to create, is to manifest things, right?
Right. Yeah, to manifest things.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I mean, yeah, it is.
Because that, from the amorphous one, if there is no distinction, there's nothing to be experienced, right?
Okay, yes.
So this is how egregores are created, but at the same, like to understand that, that this is an intellectual pursuit, do not be attached to these man-made creations.
Right, right, right. Yeah. And it's really hard, though. It's really, really difficult task. It's easier said than done. And I think that a majority of people don't get there because they don't, they don't have experiences that would let them get there, or they have them and then they rationalize them away with science.
I honestly believe, though, as I mean, I'm going to pull out this book right now. So this is my favorite book on egregores. It's by Marx Devish. If you guys have not read this, I would definitely suggest reading it. It is all theory. It is not a practical grimoire. Marx Devish is he's a contemporary occult writer. He's a part of that cottage industry circuit, but I really like him. He's a little bit of a hard ass and no bullshit guy, and that's what I appreciate about him so much. But this book right here, if you want to understand egregores, this is the one. This is the penultimate book. I think it's one of the only books out there that is completely just like, this is egregores. I've collected all the information I could find on the historical record, and this is what we understand so far. However, if you're talking about practical field manuals, you're going to have to go into some online cults in order to get those practical field manuals from the inner orders. I think the DKMU is a chaos chat room cult that they are pretty adept. They have manuals on how to create and access egregores. Those guys are absolutely batshit. Those stay, you know, be careful if you're going to search that out.
Yeah, be warned.
Yeah,
like we're warning you. Like you know, yeah. I mean, they're going to be problematic at some point, regardless, right? Like they will be. It's like a temporary gain, but possibly a longer lived.
Well, but I think the reason that because the experience of egregores and working with egregores, it is so important to understand like how we're interfacing with our worldly selves, but also how magic is, right? Because how I've elaborated on egregores tonight has touched on, you know, Platonic philosophy and Kabbalah and, you know, practical magic, right?
Right.
So the way that we compare, that we comparatively analyze egregores is extremely relevant to the magus. And any magus that has been, you know, initiated will be able to see these things and understand what these things are.
Right. Well, so would that book then be a useful tool if somebody thinks that they might be under the influence of one to read
100%,
that?
It is a useful tool. So that book, Egregores, The Occult Entities That Watch Over Human Destiny by Marx Deviche, it is going to teach you how to define egregores, how to look for them, some great examples of historical egregores, some from worldly things and others, the great egregores of the magical orders, some of the more famous ones. It's an extensive manual on egregores, and you can see right here it's very thin.
Yeah,
that's why there's not a lot of stuff out there.
So it's not that much of a read, people.
So it is a new frontier, you know.
I think well, psychology's had it around a while also, but they call it maybe something different. But it, when you're describing that to me, it reminded me of like, or how to get rid of it. It reminded me of like when you have a recurring nightmare.
Yeah.
And you're having this nightmare over and over again. And then when you figure out what it means, it stops.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. That's great. That's a good way to put it.
So it's kind of like that, you know. It's like
I definitely recommend reading that book. You will become extremely aware of all the egregores that you're attached to and the egregores that surround you. They are in your workplace, they're in your home, they are on your television, they are
in your closet,
dumb gamer hobbies.
Yep.
You know, like and once you are able to recognize them, you're gonna find yourself a lot less emotional, a lot like it's a really good perspective to have, right?
Yeah.
As for then jumping in and utilizing them magically, you know, that's something you could definitely go the rest of your life not doing, and it's not going to change your practice, you know.
Right.
So
just like I would say, focus more on like obtaining any kind of result on your own, without the use of people's emotional and psychological well-being.
Yes,
food,
exactly. You know? It's a great, I think the reason that pop psychology likes egregores so much is because when you learn how to identify them, it is definitely something that helps your psychological and emotional state. 100%.
Right. Yeah. And that's in part that know thyself.
Yeah.
Right. Know what's impacting you.
Yeah.
I mean, actually that would be, I would say then because of that, you know, that concept of know thyself, right. You would need to know what you're under the influence of.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of those kind of things that, despite it not being very well researched, it still is important to know about.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I hope that the uptick in interest in egregores, I hope that there are magists out there that will start writing about their experiences working with them. I really do hope to one day put together the first ever practical manual on how to create them and use them. However, that would be like a pretty dark tome, right?
I'm down.
Yeah.
I think you should do
It'd
it.
It'd be one of the darkest tomes to come out since like the Red Dragon.
That book's so, man. Yeah. Well, I bet you could make it better.
Yeah.
That one was a little, not so dark, in my opinion.
It was not dark? No. Every time I see... out of all the grimoires, it's every grimoire that I run into that's like, this is how to literally sell your soul to Satan. Those are the ones that I'm like, wow, okay. Like, I mean, I'm like, that's pretty dark. Because, yeah. Even the demonic grimoires, it's like, this is about controlling the demons and, you know...
Right.
It's like the Book of San Cyprian, the Red Dragon. It's like, no, this is literally like, you know, make a pact with the devil, sell your soul, you're going to hell.
I mean, just hang out in Hollywood any time and you'll have a way more darker time.
Yeah, it'll be pretty easy.
Especially these days, right? Yeah. So I it wasn't shocking to me to read that. I was like expecting more, honestly. I was like, I was kind of let down. But because again, as I read it, it's just, to me, it's like, this is a metaphorical process. Like, they're not even, like, to me, it didn't seem like it was a real, like, I can't remember which one, but I read one once that had you out under the moonlight forging a blade of steel to then cut your, like, to then offer a blood sacrifice. And I was like, I read it and I was like, holy crap. Like, if this is so ridiculously, like, complicated that if it didn't work, I'd be pissed. You know what I mean? Like, this better work. That I can't remember what one that was, but like I've got to find it because that was way darker than Red Dragon.
Wait, that was, you were reading that recently, right? Weren't you telling me about it?
I did tell you about it.
Yeah. This was like a few months ago, right?
No, I read this years ago, like 2 years, two, three, maybe 3 years ago. I came across it. It's in the online digital library I have. I don't know which one it is, but it was like, dang, like it was pretty. It was kind of Pika Trixie vibe.
Yeah.
Like those kinds of instructions where you're like, what? Like,
I love that.
Yeah. But, it was also,
that's why I love the PGM, the PGM, Pika Trix, all that like classical antique magic is just like, you know, they walk a cow around a tree four times and slaughter it when the, like, moon I love that because I'm just like, dude, like, this is
okay.
Yeah,
I just want to say it quickly, like, remember, so the fourth book of Abramelin, right, was translated recently, and in it has the folk magic and the practical magic aspect that wasn't available before, that everyone worked off of it, right? And remember the spell I shared with you about how to become invisible?
I love that spell.
Oh my god, it was like, I read that and I was like, this is seriously the spell. It will work. You become invisible as you pick up rocks and throw it at someone's face. Like, that was. Oh, take the, your shoe. Yeah, was your shoe, the, and you take it and wave it six times in front of their face, and then you throw dirt in their face, like, away.
So to cast a spell to turn invisible, you reach down on the ground, grab.
No, first dirt. Your shoe. It was first your shoe, first your left shoe. And you take it and you wave it in their face six to eight times.
Yeah.
And you say this incantation while you're doing that.
Yeah.
So obviously the person's going to be like, what the hell is this person doing? And then you pick up
some dirt off the ground and you throw it in their face.
And run.
Yeah.
And then really sets you run.
I instantly thought of the King of the Hill with Dale Gribble, where he's got the pocket sand and he's like, throws it in people's face and then just like runs away.
I was like, that was amazing.
Yeah,
I
that's the
like,
best spell. That was like, this is why nobody likes magicians, you know, because these were the types of people that were running around doing magic.
Someone did that to me. I was chasing them and they turn around, stopped and like wave their freaking dirty shoe.
Well, that's
in
what
my
I
face.
Love.
Like,
yes. Yeah.
I'm going to leave you alone now because you're seriously in.
I definitely would do that.
Disturbed. Like, 100%. It would work though. Yeah. Definitely.
It would work. It's like, especially if you're wearing like a wizard robe while you're doing it, you know, they're just going to be like, okay, so I ran into this really weird guy.
Yeah. And I just like walked away. Yeah, I was like, I don't got time for this.
I was like really mad at him at first, but
I felt sorry for him. I realized he's got a lot more going on. And like, oh my God, that was great. Like, that was so funny though. Yeah. I love that. To Dale Gribble. Yep. That's it.
All right.
So yeah, I think that was very informative. Thanks for talking with me about this, Abamon.
Yeah, egregores. I love this topic. I've revealed a lot of my wizard secrets tonight, but that's okay.
Not really. Yeah. Like, you know, I still have no idea what you did exactly.
What do you mean?
I don't know. You even told me.
Oh, okay.
You know, we know that you didn't tell everybody. That's about it.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, you didn't give up too much.
Okay. Cool. So there's still material for the tome.
There is. Yeah. Yes, definitely. I'm sure. I mean, I assume. Yeah. Yeah. I know you. You're very deep. So you have a lot of a lot of secrets. Yeah. We'll look forward to it.
All right. I appreciate this topic, Dr. Stone. I'm excited for your dissertation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll let you know when it's done.
Okay.